All right, we'll start on Kufyut Tet Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara is going to ask basically what the Gemara almost concluded in the previous part of the Gemara, which is the Mishnah says, that a Bechor takes two portions in Eretz Yisrael. Here we're talking about it was Nitchalek to Yotzei Mitzrayim. So, Vamai, why should the Bechor take two portions, Ra'uyu? In that it's not really Muchzak, which we're going to say in Eretz. A Bechor does not get a double portion in items that are to eventually fall into the possession of the Niftar. So in the case where we have here, where Tzlaf Chad has passed away, and the possessions are coming from Chefer, so Chefer probably lived past the time of Tzlaf Chad. It means when Tzlaf Chad passed away, the possessions, he did not yet have the Yerusha from Chefer. We did not have yet have the Yerusha from Chefer, or that it wasn't already Mugzach in Chefer's possession, meaning that Chefer didn't already have it, then how could he get a double portion in that in the possessions of Chefer? Meaning that only Nitchalka Haaretz at the time in the end of Pinchas, and yes, it's based on the census that was done, right, or based on the Yotzei Mitzrayim, but nevertheless, it's only distributed at the time in the end of Pinchas. If it's only distributed at the end of time Pinchas, how could Tzlaf Chad be entitled to a double portion in the area of Chefer? So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, B'yateidot, either Girsa could be Yateidot V'Oalim or B'yateidot O'Alim. Either way, with the tent pegs or the pegs and the tents, which basically means metaltalin. They got a double portion in their metaltalin that they owned, whatever they owned in the midbar. They owned tents and pegs, right? They didn't own very much, they didn't need very much else. So that's what they owned in the midbar. There they were entitled, the metaltalin, they were entitled to double portion. But in Ochanami, when it came to Chalukah Daretz, they didn't have an entitlement to a double portion. So a Meitiv Rabbo. Rabbi asked the Asi question, Rabbi Yudu Omer, Benos of Chad Natlu Dalet Chalakim. The Benot Tzavchad took four portions, not even three of our mission, but the four that we just saw in the Baraisa. And it's very hard to argue that the Pasuk in Yoshua is talking about Yateidot O'alim. It's clear that the Pasuk in Yoshua is talking about 10 portions of land, right? And those are four that belong to the Benot Tzavchad and six that belong to the Batei Avot. So Rabbah says what we concluded in the previous Gemara, again, with the exact same issue, which is Eretz Yisrael is muhzekati. That Eretz Yisrael is considered as if it was delivered already to the individuals who were Yotzei Mitzrayim. So even though it wasn't physically distributed or divided until the time of Pinchas, the time of Parshat Pinchas, time the end of the Midbar, nevertheless, it was already in the possession of those that left Mitzrayim. They already owned it. Gemara is going to discuss that in a second. But it was already in their possession. If it's already in their possession, then we're not talking about Ra'oi. We're not going to have something that in the future will fall into their possession, but rather Mukhzak. They already owned it, and the Yerusha is passing from individual to individual. If it's passing, then you can have a Bechor that has a double portion. We'll see in a second. The Gemara will actually discuss when it's Mukhzak. Meitve, Amar of Chidka. So Rabbi Chidka says, Rabbi Chidka is also famous in the Gemara and Shabbos, for introducing the fourth meal on Shabbos. Shimon Hashik Moni, Hayali Chaver Mitabdei Rabbi Akiva. I had this individual, Shimon Hashik Moni, was one of the Tamdei Rabbi Akiva, who was my either Chavruso, was amongst the those that were learning by Rabbi Akiva. Vekach Haya Rabbi Shimon Hashik Moni Omer. This is what he used to say. Yodea Haya Moshe Rabbeinu Shbenosov Chad Yeroshe Tain. That Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the Benosov Chad were entitled to inherit over here. He didn't know whether they took a chelek bechora or not. And that was the question. That's exactly the question that Moshe faced. Do they get a double portion or do they not get a double portion? He knew that they were going to inherit. He just didn't know if they were going to take the chelek bechora or not. And truthfully, the parasha should have been given over by Moshe Rabbeinu, because he's the one who gave over the whole Torah, and so too this parsha should have been written by Moshe Rabbeinu. But Ella shezachu b'not zavchat, because they stepped up at the right time, v'nichtav al yadan, because of what they did, or because they stepped up, therefore they were able to be zochea and have the parsha nichtav al yadahen, which is that what we know as parshat b'not zavchat now, and the parshat nachala, which also subsequent to the statement of Benov Skachar is recorded in the Chumash.
This is just like against the Midrash that says, or maybe it isn't, it should be Tarvami Menu Alachah, because I punished
Right. The one that's right. So we'll deal with that in a second. It's a very good question about what exactly did Moshe forget or what did he know, and it has implications in terms of what was given at Sinai. So we have to discuss that in a minute. The other thing to discuss is why can't we say that the four portions, we learned this yesterday, that the four portions that the Bnei Tzelchat got were just three brothers instead of two brothers. So just keep adding brothers and you can end up with four portions. So Tosfos over here says, no, it can't be that. Because once you do that, there's no Chiddush. Because we said before that Bnei Tzelchat were subsumed under the Batei Av of Chefer. They belonged in the Batei Av of Chefer. Why were they split out? To teach us a lesson. What was the lesson it taught us? That they get a double portion in the Bechorah. Now if you gave that all their brothers, the uncles passed away and they inherited the uncles, we don't need Bnei Tzelchat to be separated out already. It's a parsha mefureshet in the Torah that a main ben, right, that goes to the bat. And we know that in the drashot that we learned already, that bat a ben has a din like a ben. we don't need to be written in Sefer Yoshua. The only reason to write a separate allocation to Bnei Tzelchat in Sefer Yoshua is to teach us something new. What is that? Again, the issue of the Bechorah. So that would not be a good solution. Now, the second thing that Shimon HaShikmoni said, that Mekoshesh Etzim, right, should be put to death, we know, because he was Mechalala Teshavad, Shenemar, Mechalala Motumat. That already we know. He didn't know which death penalty he should get. I mean, there's four ways to put someone to death. He didn't know which of those. Right, so that also should have been written Ayyadei Moshe, or the Chtov Ayyadei Moshe. But Ela Shintchayev Mekoshesh, Mekoshesh was Chayav Mita, Benichtava Yado, and therefore it was written because of him, meaning that he was the cause or the name of the whole parsha was named by the Mekoshesh or written by the Tam the Mekesh. L'maitcha, this teaches you, Shimigalgalin Zchut Ayyadei Zakai, right, V'chova Ayyadei Chayav. So it's interesting how the Rashbam reads this. It means that we try to associate merit with those that are already deserving, or have already shown merit, and we put the something that's obligation or a detriment or a negative that towards those that already have displayed behavior that's becoming of such a negative assignment. So it's interesting that the way the Rashbam reads it, I'm not sure I would have read it exactly this way, but he says, what's the zchut? Shabbanim v'akruvim yishu et kroveim. The zchut of Parshat Nachalot, that the closest relatives will inherit. That's the zchut. So that zchut, Ayyadei Zakai, is according to the Bnei Tzelchat entitled others who are relatives to inherit. And what is chuvah? Chuvah, which is, what's the punishment of someone who's mechalal Shabbat, is skila. So the worst punishment that one could get, so those that now are mechalal Shabbat will get skila. So that chiyuv is Ayyadei Chayav, is written on the one who is Mekoshesh, which is Chayav. So I don't know, to me, I assume that you would feel the same way, that the Pashtut, I wouldn't have read the Zchut Ayyadei Zakai and Chiyuv Ayyadei Chayav to read that way. I would have read that the Zchut here is the Ktivat HaParsha. The Ktivat HaParsha in the Torah is the Zchut. Ayyadei Zakai is what the Bnei Tzelchat who were showed, right, they showed, or they queried Moshe in order to generate this problem, and therefore the parsha is written afterwards. So the zchut is that the parsha is written in their name, because the kai, because they stood up and they asked in a specific manner, at a specific time, or about a specific situation, which we'll see in a second. So that was the zchut. And same thing, chovah yedei chayav, is that the parsha of mita on Shabbos, of skila, is written in ayyadei mekoshesh, right? Because he was the one who was mechalal Shabbat, and that's his chovah. So the chayav, I don't know, the Rashbam has to come up with a zchut and a chiyuv that extends beyond just the ktivat parsha itself. It seems to say that the chuvah and the zchut are to future generations, the people who will then be subjected to whatever is written in the parsha, not simply that the parsha is written. Right, so I think that's it's a chiddush. I think it's not what I would have read as the parsha pshat here in Megalim. Zchut yedei zakai v'chuvah yedei chayav. Now, what's the question? Why do we bring all of this down? If you think Eretz Yisrael is muhzeket, my come stavikle. Why did Moshe have any safek? There is no safek. If Eretz Yisrael is muhzeket to those of Yotzei Mitzrayim, there's nothing to talk about. Of course the Bechor gets a double portion. What was the safek of Moshe? So when it says, he gufa kamas tafek lay, that's exactly what his safek was. Dichtiv. And this is to your question, David, where do we know? Where does the chazakah come from? Because it says, and we quoted this before in Shmot, right, in the Parashat Shmot, v'natati ota lachem morasha ani Hashem. I will give it to you. Now morasha, it's not clear what that is, ani Hashem. So now what is morasha? Is something that you bequeath to others. But it also has a, I would say, a flavor of morasha is also an inheritance, something that was bequeathed to you. So morasha can either be an inheritance because it's bequeathed to you, that's the morasha, or a morasha is something that you have, that you are morish, that you give over to others, you bequeath to others. So the question is here, this morasha, what does it mean? Does it simply mean to bequeath? Or does it also mean to inherit? What's the difference? The difference is whether you're mukhzak in it or not. So that's the Gemara's question. Is it Yusha Hilachem Me'avotechem, that it is an inheritance from your forefathers, meaning that when you, Yotzei Mitzrayim, who are the ones who were entitled to become the recipients of the promise to the Avot, that they will get the land, and therefore they have a Yerusha here, Odilma, Shemarushim Ve'yan Yoshim, or maybe simply it means Yerusha, means that they are able to pass that zchut to their children, their grandchildren. But not that they actually were yoresh. Not that they actually physically took, or I mean, they obviously couldn't physically, but not that they actually took possession of the land. They were not the yoshim of the promise. They were only morishim, which is an interesting, right? That they were able to bequeath something that you never actually owned or inherited. So that's the two possibilities. Now, the Rishbam says, listen, it's pashut, or it's clear, that the meaning of morish over here is part of the word, is part of the word morasha. Morasha clearly has to mean to bequeath, because otherwise you could just use the word yerusha. So morasha has to mean something more than that. So it's clear that it's simple, that there's no safek about the fact that they are morish to others, right, and not yoresh. The only question is, are they also yoresh? I mean that the use of the lashon morasha, right, instead, is that also indicative of a morish? So, upashtulei tervayu. And the answer to Moshe is that it's both. Yerushalachem avotechem, which is really the chiddush according to the Rishbam. The rest is a pashup shat. Right, so Yerushalachem avotechem is that they actually took, they were mukzak in the aretz. Umorshim ve'enan yoshim. And the fact that they're also morish and not yoresh means that they do not inherit anything, but they simply, morish, give over to others, which is what they are mizakeh, their children and grandchildren, the nichnasei aretz, to get the land, but they get nothing of the land. V'hainu tichtiv. And the Gemara says this is similar to something we see in Shirat Hayam, because in Shirat Hayam it says, tivi emo, v'tite emo, that you will bring him and plant him b'har nachlatcho, right, in the mountain of your inheritance. So it should have said, those that are speaking there, who are Yotzei Mitzrayim, who have just crossed the Yam, they should have been saying, Tivienu. They take us. Right, what does it mean, take him? Why not take us? No, Nemar, El Tivienu, that you bring him. That they have nivuah, meaning that they saw the future. They spoke in the, right, in the third, right, in the person, that third person, which is that you will take him. That they would take us to, you just spoke in the second person, not in the first person.
It was before they sinned.
Right, before the chet raglim, right, before chet egel, before chet raglim, before there was any punishment, they wouldn't go into the land. So here, they're speaking in the second person instead of the first person, right, it's indicative they were mitnabed, that they were not going to enter the land, that they would never reach it. But nevertheless, they didn't know that. They didn't understand what they were saying when they had that tzad nevuah. The same thing with Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu gets nevuah and he passes on to Klai Yisrael and says, "V'natati otah lachem morasha," he was mitnabeh, but he doesn't know what he's mitnabeh. What does morasha mean? He doesn't know what it means over there. Does morasha mean that they are muhzag in the aretz? Or does morasha mean that he will give it over to others? And from here, it might even sound, not like the Rashbam, but even the Chiddush is that they will be morish, and they will never themselves inherit the land. That means that they will never enter the land to inherit the land, but they will simply be morishim. They will simply be those that pass the inheritance down. Nevertheless, the word means both. So the nevuah, or what Moshe didn't realize, was that when he said morasha, it meant both that they inherited and they passed it along. Again, maybe from both perspectives, they inherited, which Moshe didn't understand, that the b'chor takes pishtayim because they're muchzak in aretz. And number two, maybe they didn't understand morasha. Morasha is to bequeath, but why are they bequeathing? Because they're not going to make it to the Aretz, to actually inherit it themselves, but simply to bequeath it. So that's the two possibilities of how to explain it, and we said it means both. But again, in Nevoah, that's not wasn't clear at the time what it really meant until afterwards. Now, looking backwards, you can understand what it means. So now the Tosfos asks, and David, this was your question before. Tosfos asks the question that, about Moshe. Vim Tamar, Lama Yom Istapik. Why? It's the bottom Tosfos in the previous one. Why did Moshe have any safek about what the Mekoshe Shitzim should get? Hayelo Dono Bechenek. Right? Because he should have given Chenek. Why is Chenek? Chenek is the default death penalty when it comes to Mitah in the Torah. Anytime it says Mitah, it doesn't tell you what else there is. It's something else. Then the death penalty is Chenek. B'chol Mitah Murah b'Torah Stam Chenek. That all Mitah in the Torah is already Stam Chenek. So Tosfos gives the answer. V'yish lomar misvara haya niralo. That Moshe had a svara that it shouldn't be this way. Why? Because Ki'oveda b'Rezera. D'chol duchta amar d'dome Shabbat b'Rezera. Shabbos is always compared to Avodah Zarah. They call Mechalel Shabbat b'Ferasya is like Eilu Avodah Avodah Zarah. Is it didn't like an Avodah Avodah Zarah? Right? Does he loses his Cheskas Kashrus? All these things that apply to an individual. So there are these Hekeshim between them. If we said there should be a Svara to say that maybe the Misah b'Shabbos is different. Now what is Tosfos? What is Tosfos doing over here? Tosfos is dealing with an issue, which is, and this is the Ramban has to deal with these issues also. The Ramban of the Torah who says everything is Mukdam Mukhar, and everything was given at Sinai. So what does the Ramban have to do? The Ramban has to do a little bit of gymnastics, and he does this in his introduction to Sefer VaYikra, as well as his introduction to Sefer Bamidbar. He talks about the problem of where were these halachot given? Were these halachot given at Sinai or not given at Sinai? So the Ramban in Sefer Yikra extends Sinai to include the Ol Moed. That to be given at Sinai means even Ol Moed is an extension of that which happened at the Sinai, and they're still classified as being given at Sinai. But then, Ramban writes into a problem in Bamidbar. I mean, Bamidbar already where they've left, right, Sinai, and they're being given along with stories in the Midbar. Right, so then you can't say that they were given in Sinai or in the Ol Moed that was by Sinai. So there, that Moshe repeated what he heard at Sinai. He's explicated on that which he heard at Sinai. Now, how do you explain things, for instance, like Parshat Tzitzit that are found in Bamidbar, or Parshat Mekoshe Shitzim, or Parshat Nachalot that are not found prior to that point in the Torah and are only found when in Sefer Bamidbar, as well as items that are found in Dvarim like Parshat Ayubum, that are only found there and not found prior. So what is the Ramban going to do? The Ramban's in a bind. So the Ramban, in his introduction to the Ramir, says, "Oh, ma'at mitzvot that were known there are b'Sinai." He kind of gives, like, washes it away. There's a couple of mitzvot that weren't mentioned before b'Sinai. But obviously, what you do have to say, and this is what Tosfos is hinting at, so now, what do you have to say? You have to say something along the lines of the fact that even though the lechot were given at Sinai, that either Moshe only recalled them at the time that the stories take place, that's one possibility, or the possibility is that Moshe wrote them, even though he had them, or the halachot were available and taught beforehand, they were written near the stories because of their relevance to those stories. Not that means that they were given at that point in time, not that Parshat Tzitzit is given then, or Mekoshesh, or Nachalot are given then, but it became relevant then, and therefore, like we said before, they're placed in the Torah there because of their relevance to those stories, not because that's when they were given. And so Tosfos is introducing an idea, and also another possibility is that Moshe Rabbeinu was given, and this depends, again, if you look like the Ramban or the Rambam, about the possibility that Moshe had to darshan certain types of halachot. Certain halachot had to be learned out. So for instance over here, the halacha of mitah by a mechalel Shabbat could be darshan or learned out of maybe the shoshes mitot or some sort of hekesh to avodah zarah. But you have to know that's the case. So Moshe had to learn it, but he was unclear whether that was the limud or not the limud. So this is a verification. What the Torah does here is verify that this is the limud. This says, yeah, that is the way to learn it. That's the proper way to deduct the type of halacha. So they're trying to deal with, they're trying to address, is the Ramban's problem, is where do these halachot come if they weren't at Sinai? If they're not in Sinai, then all of a sudden you have a series of halachot that are given post-Sinai. And what are the implications of the fact that they're given post-Sinai? Again, Rashi and others who don't have Mukdam u'Mukhar b'Torah can just say that that what was told in Ol Moed was already told at Sinai. They're just, you know, they're telling it over now, or they're placed over here. That's because the Mishkan's built over there. That's because of Vayikra. But the Ramban was everything in order. Has to deal with the fact that what does it mean that everything's in order over here? And for that, the people who believe that Mukdam Mukhar Torah, they have to run into these problems or have to address these issues. What does it mean that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know the halachot? So again, to address your question about whether Moshe, right, the Gemara says that Moshe got angry and therefore Nitamu Menu halachot, right, or because of this, or he was, he said, but all the hard questions bring to me, therefore he's Nitga'e. Therefore, he was Nitamu Menu halacha. Right, to say that, maybe it's still possible that that's the case. It's still possible that Moshe, right, knew halacha or had to deduce it, but he was unable to reach that conclusion or come to the right conclusion. And that's what means Nitamu Menu halacha. So you can say it's both a punishment as well as a zechut de zakai, which is that those individuals were successful at getting Hashem to help Moshe deduce it or confirm what Moshe believed in these cases. Alright, but to model if Moshe v'fnei Elazar HaKohen v'fnei Nisim v'chol Eida. So here we have a list of people that they went to. So the question is, what does this list mean? What does it mean l'fnei Moshe v'fnei Elazar HaKohen v'fnei Nisim v'chol Eida? Sh'ar amdu l'fnei Moshe. So the first way the Brayza says reading it is, they went to Moshe and he didn't know v'lo amar lehen. So davar, he didn't know. V'amdu l'fnei Nisim. Then they went to Nisim v'chol Eida. Meaning, is this a sequential, right, listing of all the people they approached? They approached Moshe, then they approached, right, Elazar, then they approached Nisim, then they approached Eida. It doesn't make sense. If Moshe doesn't know the halacha, minayin that anybody else knows the halacha. So two solutions. Ela, sares mikra b'darsheu. Right, reverse the pasuk and be doresh. Divrei Rabbi Yoshi. So Rabbi Yoshi says, basically it's listing all the people they approached, but not necessarily in the order that they approached them. So, so why is it written this way? Write it first. Right, tamodu difnei Eida v'nisim Elazar v'nei Moshe. That's not kavod. You have to write a gadol kodem. So that because of the kavod of Moshe to place him first in the pasuk, so ever they placed him first, even though that wasn't necessarily the order in which they approached the individuals. They went from the smallest to the greatest. They end up at the highest, right, party in the end, which is Moshe. But the Torah does not record it that way because it records it, even though they've approached all of them, in the way that would give kavod to the one who is the greatest, and that's Moshe Rabbeinu. That's one possibility. Abachanan amar mishum Rabbi Eliezer v'beit midrash yoshvim v'achub amdu lehem lefnei kulam. No, they approached all of them at once. I mean, they were all in the base medrash, and they approached everybody in the base medrash when everybody was sitting there. So, by Mephlege, what's their argument? One of them, meaning Abba Hanan, believes that you're allowed to give kavod to a talmid in front of a rav. And the other one says that you're not chulei kavod to a talmid lifnei a rav. So if that's the case, according to the one who says you in chokim the tamid lifnei rav, then when it's written in the pasuk, it can't be literally that they came before all of them. It must be that they went to each individual until they reached Moshe Rabbeinu in order. According to Abba Hanan, you could have approached them simultaneously, or they could be addressing the tamid in front of the rav. So what is that? So where it says the hilchasa, the halacha is chokim. The hilchasa in chokim. Halacha is, you are chalek and you're not chalek. So kasha hilchasa, hilchasa. It's pretty clear that we have a stira on the hilchasa. So hilchasa, hilchasa, lo kasha. How do poligle rabbi yekara? How do lo poligle rabbi yekara? Depends how the rabbi teaches the treats the talmid. If the rabbi already gives kavod to the talmid and treats the talmid with kavod, then it's okay to give kavod to the talmid in front of the rav. That it's not an affront to the rav to give kavod to the talmid, because the rav himself gives kavod to the talmid. On the other hand, if the rav doesn't display any kavod to the talmid, then, right, then giving kavod to the talmid is an affront to the rav, because you should be giving kavod to the rav, and you shouldn't be giving kavod to this talmid in front of the rav. Where do we find that Moshe gave kavod to others? So listen to this Rashbam. It's amazing Rashbam. Rabban says, Moshe Rabbeinu, halei palag yokara l'chol Yisrael, v'chein zed l'zeh. Moshe Rabbeinu always used to give kavod to Klal Yisrael, and also to others, each one to the other. So since each individual gave kavod to the other, therefore there was no problem, no affront by giving kavod to everybody in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, or in front of others that were greater than them. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was a Nav Mikol Adam Ba'aretz, he used to be knowing kavod in front of everybody, and therefore there was no problem of doing it in this case, according to Abba Hanan. Alright. Now, the Gemara says, Tana, below benotz levchad hachmaniyotein, darshoniyotein, tzidkaniyotein. They were wise, they were to be doresh, and they were tzidkaniyot, they were righteous. Why? Hachmaniyotein, they were wise, shilafisha adibru. They knew when to interject. They knew when to stand up and ask something, meaning timing is everything. And they knew the right timing. So the Rashbam calls it Derech Eretz. They knew the proper etiquette. They knew the proper time to interject and get the results that they wanted. Why? Means that Moshe Rabbeinu was doresh to Parshat Yomim Shneimar Ki Yishvu Achim Yachdav. So Amru Lo, Im Kiben Anu Chashuvim Tenu Lanu Nachala. If you say that Parshat Yomim says that Ben means Ayin Alav, any Zera, any individual born of this marriage that is still resulted, whether it's a daughter or a granddaughter, anybody that's there, then if we have that classification like a son here, Tenu Lanu Nachala Kiben. Vimlav, if that's not the case, titjabei mimenu miyad. Otherwise, our mother should have to have perform yibum over here. Titjabei mimenu miyad. Vayikrav Moshe mishpatam lifnei Hashem. Thank you. Right, that right away, Moshe brings their mishpat lifnei Hashem. They had a good point, so they waited. They had a. They knew that they should get a nachala. They knew we're going to see in a second. They knew they should get a nachala. Nevertheless, they waited to present their case until Parshat Yivamim, when Moshe was teaching about Yivamim, because when they interjected there, it was clear that they had an edge, they had something to say, and that forces Moshe to go and address the issue immediately. So they put it to him.
This is in Sefer Dvarim.
Right.
So according to the Ramban, that everything, most of the things at least were given before. Already.
Right, so we're right, because otherwise, what then?
The super drasha.
Right. right. So otherwise, why was Moshe teaching Parshat Yivamim and Brotzav Chader in Bar Midbar? Right. So the Gemara says, Darshoni Otem, they also greater being Doresh. Shayum wrote, Ilu Haya Lo Ben Lo Dibarno. Had he had a son, we wouldn't have said anything. Vatanya. However, Bryce, it says, Bat. If he had a daughter, we wouldn't have said anything. Doesn't make any sense. Of course, they would have gotten even if there was a. But they were benot zavchad, exactly. So Abaye Amar, I feel like a bat the ben lo dibarnu. Now they knew the drasha that a bat, a granddaughter, would precede the daughters. A granddaughter through the son would precede the daughters, and that's what it means a bat. That's how you can explain bat here. Now, what does it mean that they knew about the fact that if there was a son, we wouldn't have inherited? So the Rishvam says that they knew Parshat Nechalot. That's what they knew. That's why the Rita Shoni Yotain. That they were Kitiv. Because it says in Parshat Nechalot, Ki Ein Lo Ben. Vikvar Haya Yadua Sheben Yoreshet Aviv. Shreya Yehudot Parshat Nechalot. They knew Parshat Nechalot. Gonna Melel. Dolava Mispekelot. They had no Safek. Eli Yenotot Chelek Bechora Yilav. Right. Mimsasher Yehudot Lidrosh. So they knew how to be Doresh. Tichtiv Uvein Ein Lo. Ravartim Nechalotot. Ayish Lo Ben. Who called him Nabat. So first of all, there are two problems with that. First of all, Parshat Nechalot is written right after the question of Benot Zavchad. It's not written before. So what do you mean they knew Parshat Nechalot? Number two is, if they did know Parshat Nechalot, then it's Zil Karibei Rav. I mean, what do you mean? It says, Ubein Ein Lo, Varvartem Nechalotot Labat. Right? So if he doesn't have a child, a son, then he would give it to the daughters. What does Doresh mean over here? There is nothing to be Doresh. Right? It's written in the Pasuk. It's explicit. It's Pshat in the Pasuk. So the Rashbam suggests, what are they, Doresh? That we don't hold like Rav Papa. Rav Papa early on said, maybe, that Ema Beinu Bat, Lo Ayil Doresh Bo, Lo Ayil Doresh Bo. If there's a son and a daughter, neither will inherit. Because we needed Parshat Nechalot to teach us that a daughter inherits and a son inherits. Since we needed both of those pieces of information, then we have no drasha here to move it from the son to the daughter. So if they're both there, maybe they wouldn't get it. The Baye challenges and says, what, you're going to give it to a third party? Doesn't make sense. But he says, that's the drasha of that they were able to Doresh, which is, don't hold like Rav Papa. So Tosa says, no, it doesn't make any sense. Right? He has numerous kashot, some of them that we raised already, numerous problems with this. With the problems, one is that a buyer right away asks Rav Papa, that doesn't make any sense. What's your question makes no sense. What, are you going to give it to a third party, not the children? How can that make any sense? Number two is, what are they then, above, it says that they were chachmaniot. They knew to introduce the parsha by Parshat Yivamim. Why do they have to introduce Parshat Yivamim if it was explicit in Parshat Nechalot? And if they knew Parshat Nechalot already, what do they need Parshat Yivamim to introduce it? To near the Rashba. So he says that the Rashba thinks, the Avu Yodot, Mintchaltechem, Mintchaltam, Livnechem, Acharechem, Velo, Benotechem. By Eved Kanani, it says you will pass the Eved Kanani to your sons and not to your daughters. That was the Drasha that they made. That's how they knew. That's how they knew that a Ben is Yoresh and not a Mbat. Because they have min chaltem livnechem acharechem ve lo libnotechem. That was their drasha. Inami, gives another possibility. That Savara Mishum Debat Misibat Nachala. That they knew that a daughter causes transfer of Nachala. How do they know that? Because they know when you get married, a husband then becomes the owner of the property. And therefore they knew that a daughter would be Misibit Nachala. And therefore they knew that the priority would be given to the Zecharim, because we're talking about Chalukat Aretz and preserving the Shvatim. So in that case, they knew that the Zecharim would take precedence over the daughters. That's another possibility.
And if that's the case, what did they need to know from Parshat Yevamim? The answer to that question is that the Parshat Yevamim teaches you that Bata Ben is Kaben, meaning that any Zera that comes afterwards also has Sheikhut in terms of Nachala and Yibum, and therefore that's when they raised the question, or that's when they understood from Parshat Yevamim that Bata Ben is equal to Ben, and that they wouldn't have inherited if there was a Bata Ben.
Kasha, they're dealing with what was their actual drasha? What did they know and what did they not know? So again, from Parshat Yevamim, we can see that they were wise. They understood to ask the question then. What do they know about Parshat Nachlot that they were Duresh? The Rashbam simply says they knew Parshat Nachlot and they were Duresh, not like Rapapa. Again, it presents a lot of problems. The Rashbam introduces possibilities that they knew the information either because of Parshat Evid Kenani or because of Svarah. They had a Svarah that they were talking about Chalukat Aretz or Nachlat Aretz, and it was clear that Zecharim should take precedence over daughters. Right now, they were also Tzidkaniyotim. What does it mean they were Tzidkaniyotim? They only married those that were appropriate for them. Because it says that they could marry whoever they wanted, but then they only married the Bnei Donayim. Tani, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, afilu ktanash ben lo nisei pchuta me'arbim shana. That even the youngest of them waited 40 years in order to get married. I mean that they were at least 40 years old before they got married. So that's why, Ini, is that really true?
V'amar Rav Chista. Okay,
we'll see in a second. Ini, v'amar Rav Chista, nisei pchuta mibat esrim yoledet ad shishim. A woman who gets married before she's age of 20 can give birth from 20 to 60. Bat esrim, she gets married at 20, yoledet ad arbim. Then her productive time period is from 20 to 40. Bat arbeim, if she doesn't get married until she's 40, shuv eno yoledet. She does not give birth. So why would they wait until 40 and then be in a position or a situation where they couldn't give birth? Doesn't make sense. What type? Ela mitoch shetzidkaniyotein asen elehen neis ki yochevet. Because they were tzidkaniyot, right, they would neis was done to them like yochevet. So we'll discuss in a minute, what's the neis of yochevet? That even though they shouldn't have been able to give birth, nevertheless they were able to give birth. So David says, what does it mean tzidkaniyotein? What does it mean they were tzidkaniyot? So that's exactly what the Rishbam explains down here. It's the last Rishbam on the Amud. Umishraneish mitok tzidkaniyot hayu betuchot betzidkatan shenaseh lehem neis ki yochevet. They trusted in their neis. I mean, it's the opposite of this week's parsha, right, Moshe? But this week's parsha says by Yosef, by him, he shnatayim yamim. Why was it shnatayim yamim? Because he wasn't boteach and Hashem, right? He relied on the butler to take care of him. So it's the case here. No, they were relied on Hashem to take care of them. That they would wait till they married the people that were appropriate for them.
No, so why did they have to wait until they were 40?
Okay, so v'lakach nitakvu ad 40 shana. That's why they waited until the 40th year. B'shul enasei lahagun to find someone who was appropriate. We don't know that Yocheved got married after 40. She might have gotten married before 40. We just know that it was a miracle that she gave birth much later in life. Now, why do we know that over here that there's a miracle? What type of tzidkaniyot? Why do you have to wait the 40th year? How do we know that they were at least 40? Where do you get this information from? All right, so here, by the way, here's the answer to you before you asked me about the Mekoshesh Yitzim. Here it is, at the bottom Tosfos. Near the Rashba, the Sever Lakiman Damar Tzlavchad Haya Mekoshesh. This holds like the one who says that Tzlavchad was Mekoshesh. Umaseh Mekoshesh Haya B'tchilat Arbayim Miyad Achar Maseh Amraglim. It was right after the Maseh Amraglim. Damar B'midrash, L'Shem Shamayim Nitkavein, that he was L'Shem Shamayim. Shomrim Yisrael Kehevin Shekaznar Alehem Shalei Kanes Laretz M'maseh Amraglim. Shuv. They thought, no more mitzvot. We don't need to do mitzvot. We're not going to Eretz Yisrael. We're not going to Eretz Yisrael, which Rashi says. The only time to do mitzvot is in Eretz Yisrael. So what are the parshiot that are immediately after that? They're all the parshiot of Kashiratem Baal Aretz, Parshat Chala, Parshat Nesachim, right? Parshat Mikoshish. All of these are talking about when you come into Eretz Yisrael. So all of these are relevant, right, to going into Eretz Yisrael. No, the mitzvot are still relevant. So as you do that, he goes out. And he does Michal Shabbat to show that the mitzvot are still merim. So shuv, ein me'uvchim mitzvot, amad chilo Shabbat, kadei she'areg, v'yu acharim l'nisu ad sof arbiim shana, ken muchi kray. So therefore, this happened way in the beginning, in the first year in the Midbar. So it happened in the first year in the Midbar. They don't get married till the way end. We know they don't, B'nof Sofchad only get married at the end of Masei. When they get married at the end of Masei, that's the 40th year. So that's how we know that the youngest of them was at least 40 years old. Because even if they were born in the Midbar, they were at least 40 years old at that time of time. They could have been less than 40 years old. So that's how we know it. But again, this Tosel says the Mekoshesh was a positive. Obviously argues on the Tzad of Mekoshesh that was above that Megalgalim Chayav, Chiyuv Ayideh Chayav. Because over there he says, you know, that it's right, it was a bad, it was a negative. Now it still could be that he was wrong. That he tried, he was doing something that, to show the mitzvot, tzadikaya, but nevertheless, it may not have been the right methodology for doing it. So you could claim that. Although the simplest way is to say that this is machlokas midrashim about whether his intentions were, whether his were good or bad. So now, what does it mean that Yocheve, what needs to happen to Yocheve? Dichtiv. Vayelech ish mi beit Levi, vikach et bat Levi. So a man from Beit Levi went and married a bat Levi, a woman from Shevet Levi. So you could read it. The Bat Levi means Shevet Levi, or Bat Levi literally means the daughter of Levi. Who's the daughter of Levi? Yocheved. Shefshar Bat Me'av Shloshim Shana, Bekarla Bat. What do you mean? She's, at this point in time, Yocheved's already 130 years old. She's 130 years old. What are you calling her a Bat Levi? That doesn't make sense. Damar Rav Chama Bar Chanina Zu Yocheved, Sherota Baderech V'Gnolda Ben Achumot. This is Yocheved was born upon going into Mitzrayim. Now, it doesn't, the Rashbam here claims Ben Achumot doesn't literally mean she was born Ben Achumot as they went through the walls, but she was born in Mitzrayim. She was born in Mitzrayim, but she was conceived in Eretz Canaan. She was conceived in Eretz Canaan, born in Mitzrayim. So it could have been, has to be within their first year of being in Mitzrayim, when they've gone down to Mitzrayim. She's born there. Dichtiv, Asher Yalda Oto Levi b'Mitzrayim. It says that she, Yocheved, was born to Levi in Mitzrayim. Leidata b'Mitzrayim, v'Horata Shlo b'Mitzrayim. Well, it says that her Leida was in Mitzrayim, but not her Horata, not her conception. So then why do they call her a bat if she's 130 years old? So the Rashbam here goes through the calculations. How do you know that it was 130 years old? Because we know that there were 400 years, right? The promise of Brit Ben Abtarim was 400 years. And we know that that starts with Yitzchak. We also know that they spent 210 years in Mitzrayim. How do I know that? Because if you go to, if you start, the 400 years have to start from the Zman of Yitzchak. So if you look at Yitzchak, from the birth of Yitzchak until the birth of Yaakov is 60 years. And we know that Yaakov is Omed Lifnei Paro at 130 years old. So that means they came down to Mitzrayim when he was 130. That's 190 years. If you take 190 years away from the 400 years that are in the Brit Ben Abtarim, what's left is 210 years of Shibud. Now if there are 210 years of Shibud, we know that Yocheved is born when they enter Mitzrayim, when they're the beginning of those 210 years. How old is Moshe when they leave Mitzrayim? Moshe is 80 years old when they leave Mitzrayim. So if he's 80 years old when they leave Mitzrayim, then how old is Yocheved when she gives birth to Moshe? She has to be 130 years old. Meaning that she was born at the time they begin the 210 years, and Moshe is born 80 years before the end, meaning 130 years after that. So Yocheved had to be 130 years old, and that's the calculation, how we know that she was 130 years old. Now, she became young again, right? The same things that are said by Sarah, Nitadin Basar, her skin became soft again, it pashtu akmatim, the wrinkles went away. She became young again like a bat. So it says that he married her. What he says, Vayachzor mi baile. He already was married to her. He already has. Aaron and Miriam were already born. What do you mean he married her? He already had married her. So, Amar Rav Yehuda bar Zvida omed, she'asah la maaseh lukuchim, that he did, he retook the woman, meaning that he had a new marriage. Hoshiva ba pirion, he brought her in the chair of the bride. Aaron and Miriam, mishorim lefaneh, are singing and dancing before her. Malachay shirei tomrim, im abadim smecha. Right, and the Malchei Sherot are saying, "Imabanim smecha." Right, the mother of those children is happy. So now, what's the? I mean, there are a couple of issues to raise over here, which are so here he does Masel Kuchim. Why does he take her back? So he takes her back because Miriam says to him, "Your gzera is worth the gzera paro. Gzera paro is that only the male should die. The zecharim. Your gzera is that the males and females." So he takes her back. That's not what the Rashbam. The Rashbam says over here. Why did he take it back over here? V'achshav, it's towards the end of the narrow lines in Hashabam, like third to last line. V'achshav, in the narrow lines. V'achshav, v'chzirim p'neishim Miriam nidnaba. Lo, shatid ben latzeit v'menesh Yoshiyat et Yisrael. Because Miriam gave him a nuvah that they'll be healed. They will have the ben that's Yoshiyat Yisrael, which is different. The Rashbam claims the reasoning that he remarried Yocheved is because she had a nevuah that she was going to give birth to the Mashiach, or the one who's going to redeem Bnei Yisrael from Mitzrayim. Not that she makes a claim that your gzera is worse than Paro's gzera, right? And therefore, the Mishorim, what were they singing and dancing about? So I would have thought the singing and dancing about here is Hachnasat Kala, right? It's a Misameh Chatan V'Kala. That's what they're doing over here. No, the Rashbam claims, according to this, following the line of thought, Tov Simcha Shaya Atim Moshe Rabbeinu Atzim Mehem. They're singing and dancing because this is going to lead to the birth of the Mashiach to take them out of Mitzrayim. So the Rashbam follows this thing, this line of thinking that the whole marriage is premised on the Nevuat Miriam, and therefore they're singing and dancing about the Nevuat Miriam, and then they also, when they're born, right, they say, we'll see what's going to happen with this child, what's going to happen to the Nevuat of Miriam. Now, that's true, the Midrash brings it there, where it says, but Nireh Mati Alea, let's see what's going to happen to the Nevuat Miriam. When was that Nevuat Miriam? It's not clear when she had the Nevuat about the boy, and when she made the statement about your gzerah is worse than Paro's gzerah. Now that could have been the impetus for the remarriage. And then the nevuah could have been separate from that. The Rishman connects the two and says that was the whole reason for the marriage. That's the reason for the celebration here. And that's the reason later on why they asked, let's see what's going to happen to the nevuah over here. The second problem is that we know from the Torah that when they leave Mitzrayim, how old is Moshe? 80 years old. How old is Aaron? 83 years old. So how old was Yocheved when she had Aaron? 127 years old. So I mean, the focus here that this being the miracle is that the birth of Moshe and he takes her back and has Moshe. I mean, Miriam, we don't know how old she is. So fine, Miriam could have been born significantly earlier. But in terms of the birth of Aaron, Aaron's birth at 127. Yeah, she's a young spring chicken. At 127 and 130, she needs help. So it's obviously that was also a miracle that everyone was born at 127 years old. Not necessarily associated.
But afterwards, between those 3 years, that's when he left her. He had to take Billy Kuchik.
Right, that's a possibility. Or the other possibility is that that's Miriam's encouragement to take him back. Miriam's encouragement is, your gzera is worse than Paro, and then she marries, and then they have Aaron and Moshe. But they have both of them, not just Moshe, they have Aaron and Moshe, which presents a problem for the Rishbam, who thinks the whole impetus for the marriage is Moshe Rabbeinu over here. Right. That's because Miriam was only in the Viyah when she was Achot Aaron. But that could have been even before, I mean, she could have been in Nevuah as long as, until Aaron, until Moshe is born. So that's another possibility. The Ramban addresses this in the Sefer Shmot and says, wait a minute, Sarah gives birth at 90 years old, and all of a sudden, right, we're talking about, or 89, right, Ishtot, 89 years old, 90 years old, and all of a sudden, there's a huge, you know, a whole Parsha and Chumash talking about it. Yocheved, 130, 127 years of giving birth, not even mentioned in the Chumash. So Ramban says that it only works when it's predicted. That the Torah will only record the Nes, when the Nes is, there's specific Nuvah predicting that such an item will happen. So there, by Sarah, since the Malachim promised Sarah that she will give birth, right, and there's a nevuah also from Bitmer Amtaran that you have a Zerah. All of these items and that are already given promises to Abraham. Therefore, the Torah records the miracle of Sarah giving birth to fulfill all these promises that were given at the time. On the other hand, by Yocheved, there is no promise. Since there is no promise, then the Torah doesn't record the miracle explicitly because the Ramban says that the miracle will only be known through the Midrash, not through any promise that, if Hashem had promised that she would give birth, and promised that it would give birth at 130, then the Torah would talk about such a miracle, because there was some sort of shvua, neder, or indication that this would happen. Since there's not, therefore it's nistar. It's in the nistar, not in the negleh of the Parshiot Torah. Okay, we'll stop over here.